The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina. Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only... By God, there's football on the horizon.
Woo-hoo! Podcast.
I'm Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual. And if you can believe it or not, it is May. Rookie camp opens
it's
this week in a matter of, like, depending on when you listen to this, it may already be open.
I know. That's amazing.
Full camp, that means it's right around the corner. And because of the CFL having nine teams, one team plays in a preseason game pretty much right away. And this year, the Saskatchewan Roughriders are one of those teams. So basically after the first week of camp, we get a game, quote-unquote game,
yes,
right away on the 20th. So before you know it, we are actually going to be talking about an actual football game on this podcast. And I don't know if it's just you or just me. I know chatting with some of the people the other day at the pre-draft availability of Jeremy O'Day, I know like the people who do this for a living every day are like ready for the season to start because they've been filling their time doing all kinds of things.
Yes.
During the off season, as this media landscape does now. So when Rider season comes around, it's pretty much, okay, I can finally actually focus on a thing. But for me, I feel like this season has just kind of crept on us. Like, there was the sort of the standard, okay, it's been about, you know, the December is like, okay, yeah, we're kind of in that post-Grey Cup glow. The game is great. Some cool stuff happened, blah, 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 blah. Then it's January, and then all of a sudden it's May. I was like, where did this come from?
Well, it's funny. I think it's almost the timing of the pod as well, because it's like every time we've recorded, it's like there's been enough kind of sizzle in the off season to go ahead and maybe record more than we typically do that, or we just like each other more finally. I know for myself personally, it always sneaks up on me, right? Like,
yeah.
If anything, this year it feels longer for me because the rush season ended without playoffs, and the Winnipeg
As
Jets
does
season
with U.S. color commentator.
That's not me as play-by-play. Listen, play-by-play, we are one for one with a championship. Actually, first go on the broadcast.
Sorry, Janner, you got to go.
Yeah, I know you're extremely talented and super good at your job, but we want a championship in Saskatchewan. Sorry, Cody, you are toast. I will deliver that news to you when we go golfing next week. But it was funny. This one actually, like, it does feel like it came up quick, and then all of a sudden it's like drag because, again, the Rush not making the postseason, the Winnipeg Jets making the postseason, but pooping their pantaloons. So, yeah, I am very ready for football. I'm kind of in that, like, lost, nebulous, like, looking for things to watch. Like, I do most of my TV watching, like, while I'm doing dishes and my podcast listening, and it's just like, I fire up the dishes and it's just like the hello darkness, my old friend, because there's nothing going on. I started the roast of Tom Brady today, which is great. And at work, while I was totally not busy, boss man, Darren, if you're listening, John Cullen, his podcast on Broomgate, one-time guest of the 8N Nation. That is good. It is really good. So first two episodes are out for that for our boy, John Cullen. But yeah, I'm excited about a curling podcast in May.
You know, the hotbed of curling season.
That's right.
I mean, there's still stuff happening in curling, which is absolutely wild. But
like Brendan Botcher being punted into the sun. And, you know, there's almost enough. It's funny. There's almost enough.
Like, we could do many episodes a year on 8N Nation now if we really wanted to.
100%. Like, I almost feel like we could do one now because we're both so shitty at, like, draft stuff. It's like, hey, we could almost turn this into an 8N Nation and probably give you more relevant information than we have. But no, you're right. The offseason, it's kind of, and I think a big one too was Dave getting the job and getting a chance to talk to him is not something that, although it's,
I mean,
one of those.
We've done it with over 66% of the last three play-by-play guys. So
if I had a nickel for every time we had the Rider just new play-by-play guy on here, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it's happened twice. So can't imagine that'll be a trend, though, with again, with Dave in the role. But I am just patiently waiting for football because I have nothing to watch after the Brady roast is done. Thankfully, it's 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is going to be a phenomenal season in the CFL. It's shaping up to be one of those years where it feels like pretty much anything can happen, which is always the years where something fun and unexpected tends to happen. So we're anxiously awaiting that. But with John Tisa, we will get into the draft a little bit. And, of course, we will look ahead a little bit to camp as well, which will be starting as well. We're going to talk a bit about Nathan Rourke being back on the market. Will he come back to the CFL?
Probably not,
but maybe. And some interesting news out of Winnipeg, as they are bringing a 54-year-old to rookie camp. You may have heard of him. Yeah. It's Milt Stegall.
Milt Stegall. I almost like it's one of those names that obviously if you've covered Canadian sports, you know it. I almost want to like find some like small town newsies that don't know anything about sports, if those exist anymore, to hear them pronounce Milt Stegall.
Mm, yes. I mean, yeah, if you go, like, far enough east, you might get it.
That's fair.
Like, I think across the prairies, you're not going to find someone.
True. Even northern, you'd have to go past Thunder Bay. Like, maybe Sudbury or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe North Bay.
Maybe. Before we get into all that, though, I don't know if it caught all of CFL's attention. Definitely caught the Three Down Nation attention and some others as well. There were some great AI videos previewing training camp that were posted by someone on Twitter called @KickSoda.
Yes.
So I have no idea who they are, what their actual name is or anything like that, but frankly I don't care.
It's good
because they asked various AI programs to create songs. So I believe you probably had to ask one to come up with the lyrics, and there was another one to actually produce the song itself. So they went through all 9 teams and created the AI videos with, like, it's basically a music video, but there's like 4 or 5, maybe 6 cutscenes that just kind of repeat.
But it's all.
But they are incredible, like, and some of them are viciously on the nose for like cliches of the city more than anything.
you mean the Montreal Alouettes with the poutine out of the cup and the maple syrup farming, or Winnipeg with the 7-Eleven? What I don't get is the Walmart out of Winnipeg. The 7-Eleven.
The 7-Eleven, yes. It's the Slurpee capital.
Slurpee capital of Canada.
Yes.
I get it. Why are they celebrating with a DVD from very clearly Walmart?
I don't know.
Is there nothing better to do in Winnipeg?
Maybe.
I guess now that the Jets are out.
Maybe there's a whole secret thing about Walmart and Winnipeg. I don't know.
Well, like, shit, I guess.
Like, if this thing was smarter, it clearly would have been at a Princess Auto parking lot.
Yes! Or McMunn & Yates or a Chicken Chef. Yeah. All of those classic Manitoba businesses. Sorry, Chicken Chef or Chicken Delight, depending where you are. Maybe Santa Lucia Pizza.
Yep, which there is one in Regina. We order it quite regularly. It's delicious.
Oh, it's real good. There's one in Saskatoon, too. It's so good. Yeah, it's not quite as cheap as Cuckoo's.
No.
But it's a top pie. It is really, really good. Or Ray and Jerry's Steakhouse. Hmm. That also should have. The red leather booths. Sorry, that was also mentioned in John Cullen's podcast today, so it is very much in my head.
I will have to say the Ryder video was somewhat disappointing. Very farm, very like cliche farm, but not even really Saskatchewan farm. I don't know.
Right.
AI could have done better on that one as far as I'm concerned. It was very like trying to be touchy-feely about how much the team means to the province and et cetera, et cetera. The only funny scene is when they're all running with banjos.
It's true. Or out combining as I dial it up. It's great. They're on YouTube Shorts now. So like, yeah, they're just like gently petting sheep and llamas and... Yeah, of all of them, it was the least weird...
When there's
a
lot to work with, maybe it just shows that the AI isn't really that up to speed on sort of the jokes of Saskatchewan. Like, they could have been the whole team like running and then having to stop and wait at the Ring Road train for like an hour.
You'd think there'd be like no teeth jokes, like a cousin wedding or something, but you know, all those terrible, terrible Ontario jokes that I hear every time I go back to Ontario.
Mm-hmm. So naturally. Because of this, as everyone is into asking AI to do ridiculous things, I decided to ask the one on Facebook, Meta, I believe it's called.
Yes.
That, first I asked it to create a song about Subway lettuce. It gave me a fun, happy song, and I was like, no, 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 no,
No.
Sorry, a story, not a song, a story.
Right, you asked to write a theme song about us.
About and... us, and it was kind of a canned cliche sports kind of thing. It was kind of funny, but okay.
Fair, but and also, if that proves that how irrelevant we are with our seven listeners, AI has no clue who we are.
Yeah. Apparently, we talk about stuff on the court, if you're wondering.
Apparently, yes.
Anyway, so yes, I asked Sub to make a story about Subway lettuce. It came back with like a happy story. I was like, no. Tell me a bad story about Subway lettuce. And this is now a dramatic reading from John Fraser.
Once upon a time, in the depths of a Subway kitchen, there was a wilted, brown-edged head of lettuce named Lou. Lou was the laughingstock of the vegetable crisper, with a reputation for being the saddest, most unappetizing lettuce in the city. One fateful day, Lou was plucked from the fridge and placed atop an unsuspecting sandwich. As the customer took a bite, Lou's soggy leaves clung to the bread, releasing a bitter flavor that overpowered the entire sandwich. The customer's face contorted in disgust, and the sandwich was promptly discarded. From that day on, Lou became known as the Subway Saboteur Lettuce. His reputation spread like wildfire, with sandwich artists whispering warnings to each other. Beware of Lou, the lettuce that ruins sandwiches. Lou's infamy reached new heights when a group of brave customers started a social media campaign, #LettuceShame, sharing photos of Lou's sorry state and pleading with Subway to replace him with fresher, crisper alternatives. Eventually, Lou was banished to the compost bin, cautionary tale of the importance of usually only the freshest ingredients. And so the legend of Lou, the bad Subway lettuce, served as a reminder to always prioritize quality and flavor in the pursuit of sandwich greatness.
This means we can't be the only ones talking about this. We cannot be the only ones talking about this if AI knows this much about it.
It's like the brown wilting, the bitter flavor. The only thing it was missing was the explosive diarrhea.
I guess I didn't ask for the R-rated version.
You didn't,
or at least
didn't
PG-13, whatever they call it now.
That's fair. I wonder if you could go with a story teenage... where Subway lettuce murders someone.
Yeah, the teenage humor version of this story.
The Mad Magazine version, if you will. Open AI. All right, here we go. I'm gonna see if I can make one where the lettuce murders somebody. This is my new goal. Maybe I'll just, you know what? Instead of reading to the children tonight, I am simply going to play back that recording of Lou the Subway Lettuce.
It's an important lesson to learn.
Like I said last episode, my nephew learned it, and every time Max gets a Subway sandwich, loves the pizza sub, he does not get the lettuce. I have raised him well.
Yeah. And apparently we can't let this slide now. Apparently we've learned also that Subway's gotten rid of roast beef, which is like absurd.
How do you get rid of roast beef?
I agree, deli roast beef is probably the most overrated deli meat, but it is still like a staple for a lot of people in terms of a sandwich.
Yes. Every time you get a platter of deli meat, like the sad funeral sandwich platter, it always has roast beef on there. You throw on some little horseradish, little mustard, little mayo, then away you go. Even though not the best of meats, but it is a staple. So no mustard. They better not start serving Subway hot dogs. They better not do a line of Coke and start tossing us pizzas like Tim Hortons. Except hot dogs. Because they got no mustard in there.
No, leave the hot dogs to New York fries.
Really good hot dog. Not going to lie. Those are great.
They are pretty good, actually. Yeah. Though really it's been a very long time since I've had one.
Whenever the three times Lacey's been pregnant, that's been one of the few things she could eat on a consistent basis. Mm. So, yeah, no. And I am also a grown-ass man that loves hot dogs way too much.
Some other people who may be grown-ass hot dogs are a bunch of people who are now part of the CFL. As the draft came and went, we will get into that and much more. But first, as always, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, don't embarrass me this time. What is in the glass this week?
I'm embarrassing you again.
You're fired.
I should be. It's just I have zero restraint. And sometimes you know that. Because sometimes...
Sometimes.
That's fair. I was intending to have some Lucky Bastard vodka.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. I was intending to have some Pile of Bones Double Wet IPA. Also gone. That was my plan for tonight. So I'm drinking something that should not be named. It's not from the brewery that should not be named.
Oh God! If you were actually drinking that, you would have been fired for real.
No, I actually would have. I would have resigned. Is Sleeman's as bad as everybody else?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I mean, they're owned by a big Japanese company now. So, I mean, they're I mean, I haven't had a Sleeman in I don't know how long, but it's along the same lines. Like, they're maybe a, they're kind of maybe in between the usual suspects and like Great Western, maybe.
Oh, okay, so I'm not quite fired because my cheapness bone took over. I literally went to the co-op liquor store last night, and I'm like, hey, need something to drink. I was barbecuing burgers. I'm like, I need beers with burgers, and I need something to drink for the podcast. And then I don't know if this is a pricing error, but a 2.4 of Sleeman's Clear 2.0 was $34 off.
Off?
Off.
Yeah.
My cheapness bone took over. So in terms of beers that are almost a buck a beer, or slightly, just slightly over a buck a beer, it's not bad. And they're not entirely evil. And it doesn't taste like corn syrup. So go drink everything else I talked about. But if the budget's been hit, it is golf season. The budget takes a little bit of a hit. For a budget beer from a moderately evil company, it's not bad.
For me, I picked up, I guess, a couple weeks ago, the this year's Pink Boots from Pile of Bones. It's the annual sort of Women's International Brew Day beer. So this one is made with sort of the hop mix that is generally used worldwide for Pink Boots, fundraiser for women's stuff and all that sort of fun stuff that they do every year. I know Rebellion does one as well. So yeah, just sort of a, they add some little bit of hibiscus to it, so it actually is pink, but sort of a lighter, it is 5.6, so it's not lighter, but it tastes fairly light and pretty easy drinking. So I would recommend it. There should still be some out there.
You have beers that last more than like a weekend?
Oh yeah.
Whoa. What is that? Functioning alcoholic joke.
Mm-hmm. The Riders will hopefully be functioning this year, and they will.
I was wondering what you'd do with that.
I thought about it for a second. I was like, no, we're just going to stick with the word functioning. Chris Jones isn't here anymore, so. Of course, the draft happened last week, pretty much almost a week ago, probably by the time you'll listen to this. And here's our analysis of how we thought the Riders did and how all the draft went for all the other eight teams in the CFL. Go listen to John Hodge and J.C. Abbott. Whatever they said is 100% correct.
Do not listen to us. We've got a couple thoughts, but it's like very surface level.
Mm-hmm. As you know, so the Riders went, they picked up an offensive lineman in the first round. They went with Nick Weeb out of University of Saskatchewan in the second round. And then there was kind of a mix of guys after that. And so the interesting thing is, of course, what is sort of the big picture? Because you and I, we talk about this is pretty much where we live, is in the big picture of what this team is doing. Not so much, the sort of small, picture, everything like that. So whether these picks work out, if these guys are any good at the end of the day, can't really tell you. I don't know. They might be, they might not be. But I think the overall impression of this draft and strategy is sort of interesting because, get the impression from Jeremy O'Day before, I asked him the question, is like, with so many guys going down to the NFL and the States in various capacities now, does sort of whether they will be here in camp or not be sort of a tiebreaker now? And right out of the gate, the first two guys they picked, of course, Kyle Hergel won't be here because he's going down to the NFL. He's going to the Saints for camp. Yeah. He signed there, so he'd be there. And of course, Nick Weeb is injured, so he won't be here at the start of the season. So that's a little bit of a different situation. But right away, the risk was, okay, we're going to take two guys with our first two picks who may not be here. And so that kind of stood out to me because I thought maybe Jeremy would lean towards getting some guys who he knew were going to be here. But at the same time, he also thought that this draft was a little deeper than last year's. There's maybe about a round more extra guys compared to, sort of like higher-ish end guys than we've seen in the past. So maybe he felt that was sort of worth that risk to sort of take a couple of guys early on who weren't going to be here. I think everything everyone says about Hergel is if he does come here, this guy is potentially like generational O-line type talent.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've watched we play. Everyone knows sort of the workhorse, heart and soul kind of guy he is. So there's certainly high end to this. But it also says to me that not only do they think the depth in this draft was pretty good, that overall their depth is pretty good too. if they were in a situation where they needed guys right away, I think they would have approached this draft a little differently. But as it stands right now, I mean, there's probably six guys you can say for sure are going to start. There's a few kind of in the bubble around there, so the depth's looking pretty good. There wasn't necessarily the need to jump in and, you know, grab guys just for the sake of grabbing guys because they're going to be here. You could be a little more strategic and say, hey, we know you might not be here for a year or two, but when you're ready, we'll be here.
Well, and that's the thing with a couple picks. It's almost like deferring a little bit. It kind of reminds me of like what the Rush have typically done in the past few years is they just keep trading back in the draft, keep stockpiling more and more picks. And yeah, these are two guys you may not see on the field at all this year, but you look at next year. Okay, now you've got two more high-end talented pieces that are going to be there for next year. And then maybe next year you go out, you know, you're close. So maybe you grab somebody from the top of the draft. So it is kicking the can a little bit to next year. And it's silly to say that, oh yeah, no, they're just focused next year with their draft picks. But again, you've got two guys, like if Nick Weeb doesn't blow up his knee in the playoffs, he's a first round guy. Like he's probably who they take at three. I would more than likely say, right? Here's a guy with NCAA clout, played for Oregon, came back to the U of S, played really well at the U of S, universally loved guy that you want on your team, high motor, to steal a cliche from scouts. But again, just the guy that you know, we talked about a lot in this Rush season about give an ish. And on this podcast, I can say give a shit, which makes my life a lot easier. But he's one of those guys that has tremendous amounts of give a shit, right? For Hurgle, I think the fact, and again, this is going to sound silly for all the common, you know, guys like you and me, where 20 grand would be life changing. But the second he only got 20 grand, it was like, okay, cool. There's a really good chance he may just be a camp body for the New Orleans Saints, which means
he was a UDFA. Draft capital wasn't used on him. All of those guys that sign those contracts get a little bit of coin. Otherwise, especially if you're a Canadian and you know you have a chance to go high in a CFL draft, why would you do it?
Right, 100%.
So
that's it. So basically, he's getting paid 20 grand to attend camp with the Saints, which, you know what, if you're the Saskatchewan Roughriders and you're looking at a guy that, where's a guy going to develop better? Mm-hmm. Let's call a spade here. Is he going to develop better being the 7th, 8th offensive lineman for the first half of the season playing through a CFL training camp? Or by taking the money and going to the NFL, even if just through a camp? Like, yeah, the guy might not see a snap in a preseason game, but you're going to develop so much better in what was really going to be an in-between year for you anyways. You know, he's going to get NFL reps. He's going to see NFL talent. And, you know, at the end of the day, there is a huge difference in that. So even if he goes down to camp and gets released and maybe comes up here by Labor Day or shortly into October, then that's, to me, is exactly the kind of developmental cycle I would want for a player. Plus, an O-line guy, you know, you come out of college, yeah, season ended a while ago, but this gives him a full off season. He's going to be healthy. He's going to go down to camp. He's going to learn from the Saints. And you know what? He might be a fringe guy at camp. If he works out in the NFL, oh well. But if he doesn't, then you're getting, you know, one overall talent at the three spot.
Yeah, and I think in all likelihood, if he's a guy signing as a UDFA, you know, sort of for that, for 20K, you know, it's basically the Saints or nothing. This isn't one of those situations where, like, there's the guys out of UBC or different Canadians drafted in other spots in the draft. It's like, okay, he's probably not going to get at least this season another look in the NFL.
No, this year.
So if this doesn't work, it's like, okay, the next stop is the Saskatchewan Roughriders. This isn't a Nathan Rourke situation where, okay, this is a guy who's probably going to bounce around for a bit. At worst, you know, whatever you want to call it, yeah, he's here midseason, maybe next season if he doesn't make the team, which is probably a long shot. Given the situation and, you know, the camp bodies and the whole thing, we've all talked about this a whole bunch, but I think it was a risk worth taking because, yeah, he wasn't going to start here unless he had, like, the most monstrous of monstrous camps, which I don't know how an offensive lineman would do that and prove that, to jump over some of the guys he would need to jump over this year in order to start. But in all likelihood, yeah, he's 6, maybe 7 on the depth chart. He's maybe the designated scratch at best every game until at some point of the season where maybe he's necessary, you know, where he needs to come in, but Yeah, I think it was a risk worth taking, and Weeb's certainly a guy, it seems like, even if he's not going to play this year, he's probably worth having in the locker room. So,
Certainly, and he's the kind of guy you're going to want around everybody. Yeah. And again, there's a young linebacker that you're bringing in that has, you know, first-round talent that, let's face it, I mean, knee surgeries are still a scary thing, but this is not your knee surgeries from the 70s, 80s, 90s. Guys are bouncing back like never before. Like,
no, and as you talk about how it's sort of kicking the can the next year a little bit, and I don't think that's necessarily the worst idea.
No.
Obviously, you know, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders' goal is to win a lot of football games this year and potentially win a Grey Cup. That is the goal of every team every year. I'm not suggesting otherwise. But this is year one of a brand new coaching regime, and we're going to see at camp sort of what this team is going to be, what this team is going to look like, what it is going to mean to be a Saskatchewan Rough Rider under Corey Mace. So, and this could be completely wrong. It could go completely great from the start, but odds are they may have a bit of a slow start record-wise to start the year. So they may not necessarily be in the absolute best spot to win a Grey Cup this year. I'm not saying they can't, but, you know, we saw this in Corey Chamberlain's first year. You know, like there's going to be bumps in the roads along the way as this thing builds to say, okay, we're going to put our best foot forward with the guys we have this year, but next year, when we have this whole thing down pat a full year in, we are going to hit the ground running.
Right. And it's never a bad thing to have the amount of talent. The more talent you can have, the better. Right. And and I think developmentally, and I hate to say it, you know, we would be in the lineup this year if not for that knee injury.
He'd at least be like a special teamer or something.
100%. But I mean, he's still going to be around the team. He's still going to be in the room. He's still going to be in meetings. You know, he's going to be doing his rehab in Regina or Saskatoon, and he's going to be a member of that team and get to learn and watch video and probably practice by the end of the year. So, you know what? They didn't come into the draft with any. This isn't a couple years ago when it's like, holy crap, they need old linemen. They need everybody. They need this. They need that.
Yeah.
You know,
Jeremy has sufficiently restocked the cupboards.
Yes.
Other than a couple of receivers, I have questions about whether he's really found sort of those game-changing kind of guys. But he's rebuilt the Canadian talent to the point where there isn't a, you know, a glaring weakness, you could say, anywhere.
No, and he just took two swings, and if one of the two connects, I think you have to call this draft a success. And again, lots of talent in some of the other guys that are going to come up, be your special teamers, push those guys and push those Canadian depth. You said it best. We said it during the preamble. Jeremy O'Day has yet to draft a Canadian star, but he's drafted lots of guys that, you know, are in the mix that are your depth guys, and you need that to win in the CFL. That will never, ever change.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so we will see how this progresses now. And I think, you know, sort of look ahead to camp a little bit. To me, perhaps, no offense to the defense, you know, like, I think for the most part, we can go back and we can watch Corey Mace's defenses in Toronto. We can get sort of an idea of what they were doing there and get a little bit of taste of what they were doing when he was in Calgary. And you can kind of maybe put the pieces together a little bit in terms of, you know, what we should expect from this defense. It's going to be high energy. They're going to make plays. I think it's going to be fundamentally sound. They are going to hit, I get the feeling. This is going to be a physical defense that, if all goes well, is going to make life miserable for their opponents. I'm sure that is exactly what Corey Mace is going to want to see. So really the big question going into the season and this training camp is going to be what this offense is going to look like, because it's obviously the part of the game that's needed the largest overhaul for the team.
Yes.
And it really has a first-time offensive coordinator who we're not entirely sure what he wants. I mean, Mark Mueller comes from Calgary. We've seen what the Stampeders have done offensively over the years during his time there, and there's been various, you know, degrees of what that offense has looked like and what they've done over the time since he's been there, but he's never really been the guy, and it's difficult really to say how much say he would have ever had in the offense considering the head coach has been the offensive coordinator until last season. So
yes,
I don't know, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm not saying Mark Mueller is going to be good or bad. I don't know. And it's going to be intriguing to see how we, you know, how they approach the game and what we learn of Mark Mueller as an actual offensive coordinator in this league.
Well, looking further down the draft, too, I mean, I think they're going to work with the pieces that basically they have there, as reading through, you know, John Hodges' article that literally breaks down every pick in the draft. It seems like they got a smattering of alignment. There's not anybody really there on the offensive side of the ball that you're like, yes, this is going to be the guy. So you have to accept the fact that whatever Mueller's going to do, it's going to be with the pieces that largely have been picked up in the offseason or here last year. Help was not coming in the draft. You're not suddenly, you know, finding another Keon Schaefer Baker in your later rounds. You're finding depth guys, right? So I'm with you. I'm intrigued to see what it looks like. I'm even just intrigued to see what the offense looks like with a healthy Trevor Harris.
Yeah, healthy Trevor Harris, hopefully a beefed up offensive line, a different running game with, you know, maybe more emphasis on blocking from their running backs and those sorts of things to help Trevor Harris, you know, stay in the pocket and do what he does.
And not explode his kneecap again.
Mm-hmm. And I think, and maybe that is fair. Maybe there isn't a key to what Mark Mueller is. Maybe, and I think if he's smart, Mark Mueller will just see what he has and works off of it, as any good coach should. So maybe there isn't some grand thing we're going to learn about Mark Mueller this year. Maybe this is a thing where the offense kind of evolves over time based on what they have, which to me would be a great sign of a coach.
Well, and you said it. You absolutely said it. You're not looking like when Jason Moss was here where guys were plugging into the Jason Moss system. You know, when they've had previous offensive coordinators here that, okay, this is how you're going to do it. This is my system, and this is how it's going to work out, right? So it is going to be fascinating. It is going to be one of those things that if you don't just bullshit with everybody else while you're at training camp, it's something that maybe people will observe in training camp. But, again, I'll leave that to people that are much smarter than me to make those observations. Through the footballs.
Mm-hmm. One guy we're, I would say, 99.9% certain that will not be at Saskatchewan Rough Riders training camp this year is quarterback Nathan Rourke.
Right.
I'm not going to say 100% because stranger things have happened in this league, but realistically, he was waived by the Patriots, set to be released if no one picks him up off waivers. I have to admit, a little bit surprising for me. I know logistically, you know, logically it shouldn't have been. They took two draft picks on at quarterbacks. Obviously Drake May was going to be a problem for Nathan Rourke, no question about that. I just think Milton out of Tennessee, who they picked, is complete garbage. So
100%
Nathan Rourke is going to be is 1,000 times the quarterback he is, but hey, nonetheless. So I thought for sure he would have at least had a chance to go to camp, compete, probably beat out Milton, probably beat out Bailey Zappe if he's still there. And then that leaves Drake May, who's probably going to be their guy eventually. And then, I mean, Jacoby Brissett's like sort of the veteran bar that's in there, but it's not really that high of a bar to clear. So I thought,
no.
Okay, this isn't ideal for Nathan Rourke anymore, but it wasn't the end of the world either. So, but obviously the Patriots felt differently because draft picks, even late in the draft for a guy who's garbage, Trump all apparently.
The old politics of the NCAA.
Yeah. Not even know of the NFL.
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, and so whatever. I guess that's their decision. So, of course, naturally, this has sparked decisions about what Nathan Rourke is going to do next. Talking with my colleagues at 3Down and seeing some other various stuff online. For obviously, I think because Nathan's going to sniff out every NFL opportunity he can still, and deep in my heart, I hope he still gets an invite to camp somewhere this year. I hope he signs with someone somewhere that at least takes him into camp. But based on most teams' cap situations this year, it seems like it's best for probably both Nathan Rourke and the CFL teams if he just stays down there for the rest of this year. And then if camp doesn't work out this year, then all bets are off next year because there are very few teams that could probably make this work financially unless you really get goofy with the marketing budget. I don't know how many teams are willing to get that goofy with it just yet.
Well, but the silly thing is, 9 teams should be willing to get goofy.
Oh, absolutely. And I talked about this with you and with the 3Down guys and everything. If I'm the Argos, I'm backing up the truck right now.
Oh, 100%. I'm telling Chad Kelly to
get lost. He's ahead. Even with whatever's happening with him right now, even if all that sort of gets cleared up and he's proven innocent, fine. I don't believe it. Fine.
Right.
The guy is clearly still a head case and is a problem for your organization. You show him the door. I know they've apparently already paid him $300,000, but maybe to swallow your pill and get out of that.
Well, know? That's why he can go on Instagram Live and be completely unhinged. And that's even the thing. Like, you know, there's the case and the dark cloud and the allegations. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I believe the accuser here in the Chad Kelly situation. But, you know, it's the Instagram Lives. It's everything else he's doing that's like, that's
it's not like there's anything about this guy else says that he's stable. So
No, there's
and
not.
Clearly a mass exodus out of Toronto this year also suggests there is a problem within the organization probably caused by this guy.
100%. I mean, you look at how many guys went elsewhere. Like, you've got, you know, a guy who might be talent-wise the best quarterback in the CFL this year, and you've got guys completely jumping ship, which is ironic because they're the Argos. But you're right. They've got that Bell MLSC money. I mean, the Leafs played, yeah, you know,
pay
three
the guy
home playoff
whatever,
games.
What's the minimum? 75 now? Right? Put him 75 on the books and pay him $1 million of marketing.
Yeah, exactly. He is your new head of ticket sales. Congratulations, MLSE. Like, I don't know what... Like, if I'm any team, though,
yes.
I don't
like,
care
like,
what...
let's say we go through the process. Nathan Rourke finds a camp this year. Maybe sticks on PR. He bounces around a little bit through the NFL through the rest of next season. Decides after that, okay, it's not going to work out for me down here. I need to go start playing some football games again because he's still probably young enough to come back up here for a year or two and maybe go back. So at that point, then it makes sense to be okay. If his agent's smart, he's giving them this advice of saying, unless that stupid, you know, marketing offer comes from a CFL team, just bounce around the NFL this year. And then in January, we can assess our options because the teams will then have a wiped clean slate of their caps. And he should be getting about 9 phone calls. Sorry, I don't care who your quarterback is.
Yes, I would. And it's funny that hell has frozen over. Both me and you and Greg from Piffles agree with a Michael Ball take that the Riders, that even though Trevor Harris seems like a good guy and is a decent quarterback, should absolutely back up the money truck. Now, see, if I'm Nathan Rourke, I try to find a ride through at least training camp.
Yeah.
NFL training camp.
Yeah, for
right?
Sure. Yep.
And then you get somebody to pay you like a one-time bonus of whatever the hell is left on their cap for you to hold a clipboard for the final 9 to 10 games of the CFL season. Not for you to come in and play, but like if I'm any of the other 9 teams and it's Labor Day and I have a chance to get Nathan Rourke on a 2-3 year deal, I'm doing it. I don't care if I got to pay you $300,000 to sit around this year. After you've been at NFL camp, I'm doing it.
Yeah, and I think the other question is, despite the cap scenarios some teams are in, or basically everyone in, because in the CFL, everyone has their money budgeted out for the year, basically after free agency.
Yes.
You know, I think even at that point, if you can work it enough there, maybe even if you're losing draft picks, I mean, is it worth being
Who
over
cares?
The cap to make sure that you have Nathan Rourke on your team next year?
Yeah. Yes.
Is basically the question comes down to, and I think to me, the answer is a resounding yes.
Yes, and there's not a single team that, like, and it's funny, the team that we mentioned, the Argos, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I think, and there's been discussions about this with some other people, too. Hamilton feels like a great spot for him.
Yes.
Because, I mean, Bo's not making a ton of money. They don't have much else. And Bob Young is one of those guys who will give him a goofy contract with a lot of under-the-table money, like legal under-the-table money, if he has
yes.
to.
Yes. No, 100%. He'll find him a house. He'll find him whatever he needs to do. Find him a car, whatever he needs to do. But yeah. I really think... Let's face it, the Trevor Harris deal is done after this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Trevor Harris deal is done. If you're the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, that you're presumably going to be flush with cash again, now that, you know, you're past the COVID era, you've got lots of money on the books and things like that. Like I said, do you not, after, I think Rourke will find a ride in camp. There, I don't think there's an NFL team that's not going to at least bring him in for a look in camp.
Yeah, I agree.
Even if he's a fourth, fifth guy, right? He's going to get a look in training camp. He was so good in the CFL. He was good in the NCAA. He's just a little undersized, right? So
I mean,
if
he had
I'm
a hell of a cap at Jacksonville last year, too.
Yeah, he did. He was great. And by all accounts, he was doing all the right things in New England as well. Like, the guy was on the active roster when Mac Jones was blasted into the sun. So if I'm Nathan Rourke, though, like, you got to think, you can probably get, like, I don't think, like, somebody would sign you to, like, a goofy, like, and again, because it's prorated based on what you make per game, somebody might sign you for an $800,000 prorated contract after Labor Day, right? Take all that money to go start on the team next year, and then whatever they pay you next year on top of that, it's all gravy. That's the way you're going to me, that's the way you're going to get Nathan Rourke, is you're going to pay him basically over $1 million in a calendar year. You're going to pay him a big signing bonus this year after Labor Day. You're going to sign him to a big contract next year, and there isn't a team in the world that needs to look at doing this. And again, Trevor Harris is coming off the books for Saskatchewan. If I'm the Riders, I am giving Rourke whatever he wants. I would even, like, he can have the SGI building downtown Regina. He can have the Delta Bresboro in Saskatoon. Like, whatever you need to do to get Nathan Rourke here, you do it, because to me, this team, again, anybody can win the Grey Cup any given year, especially this year is going to be chaos. But to me, you add Nathan Rourke to this, as we just talked about, this group that's just getting stronger into next year, especially with the young talent, and you got a bona fide contender.
Yeah. It feels like it'll be a long shot at the end of the day, because Nathan Rourke should have the pick of the litter and he should be able to go where he wants. And
right.
I don't know if the bubble of Saskatchewan is exactly what he's going to want, but we'll have to see how it plays out. But it certainly should be, an interesting January if it kind of goes the way we think the next, few months is going to go, no question about it.
Yeah, we're gonna have Rourke watch basically every time a quarterback has a crappy game. So book that for when Zach Caleros poops his pants in the postseason, for Rourke watch to hit Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm. What is hitting Winnipeg this year is Milt Stegall watch.
Amazing.
And this is just a fun story. I believe he started last year. I think Milt Stegall was trying to get himself onto basically a training camp roster for a day.
Yes.
So when it continued this year, and finally someone bit, and it was naturally the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He's not going to main camp, but you will see 54-year-old Milt Stegall at day one of Blue Bomber rookie camp with the pads on. I assume going through everything else, that the same thing all the other guys are going through. Not obviously because he's trying to make the team. He just wants to prove that he's in shape and can still do it. So, hey, if he can actually do it, more power to you, Milt.
I absolutely love this. Mm-hmm. I love this for so many reasons. A, it's just cool.
Yeah.
And the content that, nobody gives a shit about rookie camp.
No.
Right? Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, Milt Stegall's in Winnipeg. You're gonna have some eyeballs there. I'm sure the Bomber social media people, they're gonna put some great content, some great videos. Our friend Derek Taylor's probably gonna have a ton of fun with it, right? So I think that's great. And two, the greatest receiver in CFL history is going to be on the field practicing with your crop of rookies.
Mm-hmm.
That cannot be a bad thing. It's not like he's taking a job from somebody. He's going to be out there. He's going to be having fun. Guys are going to be learning from him. And if he can keep up to these guys, that's incredible. Like, he has very much stayed in shape post-playing career, right?
Yes.
If you've gotten a look to him, look at him on the panel, you got to get to meet him, anything like that. The guy looks like he can still play. I hope
his diet is a running joke on the panel, right?
Oh,
like the guy eats chicken and lettuce, and that's kind of about it.
Yeah, guy's a freak of nature, right? And if you want to commit to that much chicken and lettuce, all the power to you, Milt. So if you're going to, ruin your life by not enjoying like deep fried foods or large amounts of beer, you might as well go out and let you can still potentially play professional football when you're 54 years old.
Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.